Fantastic Man? Try Fantastic Men, one of the most influential magazines of the last decade and a bit, breaks the habit of a lifetime with its latest cover. Plus, a title from Germany to boost your hosting skills, and a magazine about cities that doesn't shy away from the grittier aspects of urban living. All that ahead of us today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Fantastic Man was launched in 2005 as a niche men's magazine. At the time, it wasn't the most obvious candidate for world domination. But 12 years later, everything from your sister's university prospectus to your local hairdresser's leaflets seems to have been influenced by its design principles. Hert Jonkers and Jop van Bennekom are the men behind it. They had cult success before Fantastic Man with the gay lifestyle magazine But, and somewhat more than cult success since with the Gentlewoman and the Happy Reader collaborations with clothing brand COS and publisher Penguin respectively. But Fantastic Man has remained perhaps the most beloved title in the stable, famous for featuring a portrait of just one fantastic and normally famous man on each issue's cover. The latest edition broke with this convention to feature a group shot of some anonymous locals from the Portuguese surfing town of Peniche. Keen to find out more, Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Hert Jonkers.
Hert, a pleasure to welcome back to Monaco 24.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, we're talking about one of our favorite magazines, Fantastic Man. And I have to say, my first impression when I saw the cover on the newsstand, I was very surprised because it did feel like a new Fantastic Man in some ways. Was it your intention to get people to not be safe, you know, to surprise people in some ways?
Of course. I mean, I think we always try to surprise. And with this cover, where we for the first time didn't put one person on the cover but five, these men from the Peniche in Portugal, we felt excited about changing the cover, the way that we're always excited to change something about the magazine. You know, we always say we don't love the concept of a restyling because that sort of sounds very drastic, as if you did something wrong, but it's always nice to change something. So to us, it's always a constant evolution and tweaking and a constant challenge.
Well, and I have to say, at the same time, as a surprise, but the beautiful man in the cover, they still feel very much Fantastic Man. And what an amazing selection of models as well that you found. I mean, they're not models, I guess.
No, they're not models at all. No, because they're surfers and fishermen from Peniche. Yeah, it felt right to us also because we were very much thinking about the whole sort of like living in groups and the sort of community feeling.
Because there's quite a few other stories in the magazine that talks about this theme that you just
mentioned.
Yeah,
we went to Alaska and photographed a lot of people there. We weren't in a very individualistic state of mind, but more in a let's do it together.
Oh, that's beautiful.
More people should think that these days, I think.
No, I agree. And in some ways, you know, I have to say, you know, I've worked with you guys years ago. A lot of magazines in some ways got inspired by Fantastic Man, let's say, you know, so I think you also wanted to change a bit.
Absolutely.
You know,
to
be honest with you, I'm sure they'll get inspired again.
Maybe, we'll see.
What about the fashion? Is still one of your main, you know, themes in the magazine? How is the fashion industry for men been changing since you've launched Fantastic Man?
Well, I got the impression it got much bigger to start with, because it was really, I would say 12 years ago, was still sort of considered a bit of a niche market, and they realized ever since that they can actually sell a lot of things to men, I think. So it feels like it's been taken much more serious. I mean, of course, in terms of the fashion industry, there's a lot of things happening because a lot of shows are being canceled at the moment, and they're all, you know, people, a lot of brands have decided to sort of show men and women together. So I think a lot of things will be happening again soon, just because maybe the whole concept of a men's fashion week will disappear, which I'm, you know, not that we care too much, because we're not interested in fashion in that sense that much anyway. You know, to us, fashion has always been just a way of being interested in clothes. You know, we're interested in how people dress and sort of how people can challenge themselves to dress. I mean, you can dress yourself like everybody else and nothing will ever change, but that just is not going to happen because there will always be people that want to challenge themselves and wear baggy pants if the skinny pant is everywhere. So, you know, we're interested in the sort of the mechanics and the psychology of changing the way you look.
And that's one of the things why I actually enjoyed Fantastic Man since I've read for the first time. It's all about the challenge because, I, of course, you have to show the new, the latest from, you know, whatever brand it is. But you put on the page in a different way. It's just not a catalog of a man wearing a nice, I don't know, gray suit by Armani, for example, or something.
No.
It is a little bit about challenge in some ways as well.
Yeah, because otherwise it'll be so dull.
Yeah. We don't like dough things.
Absolutely not.
Talking about something that's definitely not dough, I love, I saw Call Me By Your Name very recently, a film that touched me a lot. And I loved your interview with Luca.
Thank you.
Guadagnino, and I'm glad because you actually featured him, I believe, 2 issues ago or something. But then you came back after the film's about to be released.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, very weirdly, I was at the set of the film a year and a half ago, and I wrote a very small piece about it. Just because I love being there, but I didn't. Yeah, well, I mean, the film wasn't out yet, so it wasn't. There wasn't really a reason to write something big about it. We saw the film a couple of months ago because we got a preview, and I mean, I love that film. It's so beautiful and so touching, and so I mean, God, the monologue by the father towards the end just literally makes me cry if I think of it. So yeah, I started this series of conversations with Luca, the director. Very much enjoyed that, I must say. He's such a fun person to speak with and to listen to, which resulted, I think, in the longest interview I've ever written or published. You know, it was just too good what he was saying.
I wanted more, you know, I wanted more.
Well, there is a lot more, actually. Yeah, I mean, I had to stop somewhere.
Send it over to me, because I love that cheeky bit where you're saying which films you saw, I think, last year. Mm. And then it was like, hate it. Love it. You know, it was a bit almost like smash hits about it in some ways.
Well, that's good. I hope so. Yeah.
I thought it was quite fun. And another one, last time we came here, we're talking about your kind of online presence. I know you have the questionnaire where you ask like some men, what do they wear? How's it going, the online presence for Fantastic Man?
I think it's good. We actually did change our website recently just because, you know, it was running on an old server and on an old program or whatever. It needed a freshening up, so we did make a new website and, you know, questionnaires is part of it. We started a series of tips that were just because we sometimes see something that we like. I mean, that's the downside of making a biannual magazine is that you can say something and then you can't say anything for 6 months in print, but at least we can say things in between what we like. It's not a full-fledged news site because I don't think that's our thing. And, you know, other people do that quite well. And I'm not interested to sort of compete with the news industry of sort of having to churn out 15 tidbits of news every day. So it's definitely not that. But we're publishing pieces from our back catalogue because a lot of things, especially from the earlier issues, are hard to find. So
a lot of issues are sold out, actually, in fact.
So, quite some issues are sold out, yeah. Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, I still think it's a small website and I like it to be a small website. There's stuff on it. We just published a series of Polaroids from a party we did last week with Gucci in Amsterdam, which was fun, so.
Oh, well, talking about Gucci, that's such a huge influence in the last year or so.
On everybody.
On everybody.
Incredible,
I think it's,
yeah.
There's even a song in the American charts. It's a rapper called Lil Pump, and the song's called Gucci Gang.
Okay.
I mean, it's very much in the pop culture as well. It's admirable in some ways. I'm going to ask something that you ask everyone in your questionnaire. What garment is key to your personal style? I hope you came prepared.
I did not come prepared, but I have a continuing fascination for the cargo trouser, I must say. Again, that's something that I'm always interested in, is that it's something that I hated for years. I couldn't stand people wearing them. You know, it was like the epitome of bad taste to me. Until one day you think, well, actually, I think that because I really like them or so. And it sort of gives an interesting silhouette, I think. I find the lower part of a men's outfit usually quite boring if it's just two straight pipes. So I sort of think it gives an interesting thing to the legs.
I know, for example, you do like cargo trousers, but do you feel that sometimes you change your personal style quite a bit? You get influenced by, you know, new things, or you're quite conservative in the sense that you're, you know, didn't change that much 10 or 20
years? I'm quite consistent, I would say. Consistent. Yeah. I've always loved that story of a friend of mine who was walking on the street one day, and somebody came up to him and said, do you have Jesus in your heart? And he thought, well, if that's the kind of question that people ask me, I'm really not looking the way I should look. So he completely changed his look. That was the sign. It's like, oh, okay, something is wrong if I get sort of people come up to me and apparently I look like a desperate person or so. But I've never had that so far. I mean, the interesting thing is you do notice that things that you always have loved, at some point, you know, sort of like you start to realize that they don't suit you anymore. So I don't know. It's almost sad, I think, to... I like collecting clothes in the sense that if I find something and I like it, I'll keep it for a long time. I take good care of it and I don't toss it away easily. I'd rather put it in storage for a while, thinking I'll wear it one day. And at some point you find out, well, actually, you know, that phase is behind me or so. So...
Yeah, I know the feeling a little bit. It's interesting, but I would like to come back to the magazine because, of course, you guys been going on for a while now. Of course, you have those dedicated readers that read Fantastic Man since issue one. Do you think you're also talking perhaps now to a slightly younger audience that is discovering the magazine? I don't know, perhaps they bought like the latest issue or the new one. Do you feel that, or who is the reader, more or less?
Well, first of all, I hope that. Mm-hmm. I do feel that. I mean, it's always interesting if you speak to somebody and they say, oh, you're sort of like, you've been going for like 2 years, right? So it's like, well, actually, you've been going for 12 years. And so then you realize that they've only discovered it recently. So, yeah, I do think there's a constant sort of group of people discovering the magazine. And you know, it's important to keep it young because you can sort of like... let the magazine grow up with your own age, but that's not, you know, I mean, how interesting is that?
Yeah.
So I'm sort of, you know, I like magazines to sort of present me things that I don't know. And so I also want to find and read things in a magazine that I didn't know. So inevitably, you know, the influence will have to come from my colleagues as well.
And in some ways, like as a reader, especially as a Fantastic Man reader, I want to be surprised, but of course I want the magazine not to go steer away. I don't want to suddenly, the magazine becomes something completely different. So that's why I was very glad, actually, very happy about the latest issue. As I said about the cover, it was a beautiful surprise and a beautiful image as well. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, I mean, well, thank you again. Mm-hmm. It's just funny how, you know, I'm always amazed by that sort of, that mechanism that people sort of think that it's a certain thing. It makes me a little bit nervous if people say, oh, but you do this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, very early on in Fantastic Man, I think after three issues or four issues, somebody said like, oh, and who's the fashion, who's your next fashion designer on the cover? And it's like, well, it's not as if we always put fashion designers on the cover, although maybe issue number 2, 3, and 4 did have fashion designers on the cover just because it just happened to be that way. Then you kind of think like, I don't want to get stuck into this sort of formula because it's basically quite boring.
That was Hert Jonkers, and the latest issue of Fantastic Man is available from all good newsstands. There are plenty of magazines out there that blur the boundaries between hospitality, design, and culture, but few of them have an Oscar Wilde quote translated into German on the front cover. It's the calling card of the 12th issue of Salon. It's a German magazine edited by Anne Peterson, enjoying a rising circulation in its homeland. To tell us more about the magazine's history, Anne spoke to Fernando.
Anne Peterson, a pleasure to welcome here at Monaco 24. I have your beautiful magazine Salon in front of me. I have issue 12. Before we talk about the latest issue in particular, when was the magazine found?
We started it in 2014. So actually we developed it the whole year and then we came out or we hit the kiosk in November. So that was the first issue, Christmas 2014, 3 years ago.
For those who haven't seen the magazine yet, which kind of themes do you cover in Salon?
Actually, it's like a hybrid of food and interior. I think in the beginning it was meant to be like the German food Vogue. So that was what my publishing house told me what I had to do. The good thing was that I could actually do what I wanted. And I think I just founded a magazine that I thought that I would love to read personally. And I think it's a mix of food and interior. It's a lot about hosting food, drinks, hosting interesting people to dine with, topics to talk about, a bit like Vogue meets Kinfolk meets Harper's Bazaar.
No, it's very beautiful indeed. And I was wondering, how often do you guys come out on the newsstands?
4 times a year. It's like seasonal, which is quite good for us. So we have a summer issue, autumn, winter issue, which works quite well because you have the food is very seasonal and all the subjects. I think people like that. It's not too much and it's quite timeless, the content, I think, so that I think people can collect the issues.
Well, talking about collecting, one of my favorite things of the magazine, I do love the recipe supplement that you have inside the magazine. It's so clear and fantastic recipes as well. So, you know, I can see that food, you know, does take a big part on the magazine.
Yeah, and also I think what we wanted to do is we wanted to create a new food magazine that is very beautiful. And I think often the recipes destroy the structure of the magazine. And if you have it in this beautiful, tiny little extra booklet that you can take out of the magazine, you have the coffee table magazine on the one side, and then you can take this little book in the kitchen, and it's still very beautifully made. We always open the magazine with this big illustration, which should remind of a book, like the opener in a book and the first pages and the last pages is always a great illustration or a big picture. And that we open the little recipe booklet with the same print or illustration. Like in this current issue, it's Luke Edward Hall who did this beautiful dinner scene. And you will find it again in the little booklet.
The photography is also fantastic. You know, it's perfect to have good photography in a magazine like yours. For example, I have a story here on page 38, So Good, with some, I don't know how to describe, some sort of kind of soup with mussels. And it's really beautiful. Do you pay a lot of attention to your photographers and the type of photography you use in the magazine?
Yes, of course, because I think that's also something that was still space that we could fill, or we could try to invent something new, or try to do it in a little different way. So our creative director, that's Thomas Niederster Werbeck, and me, we try to work with new photographers. We very often work with photographers who are not originally from the food area, but from another area, or still life, who will do the food shoots with us. And I think that works quite well. Also to mix in this way, of course, I mean, that's not new to mix it with decoration, but I think we try to make something new also with a legendary dinner. That is the last, that's also something we have in every issue. We cook a facsimile of an old menu, like we did, for example, the wedding of the English Queen, or we did GFK in Berlin, or we did Jackson Pollock, or Coco Chanel at the Côte d'Azur. So we always do this kind of historical stories, and then we cook it. So what was the dessert for the Queen's wedding? And then we will also make a shooting out of it and have very beautiful pictures that I think that are hopefully quite unseen.
And another question I'd like to ask about the magazine's business model in terms of sales, subscriptions. How is it faring in this new media landscape?
Actually, what I wanted to create is something very new, something that I haven't seen before. Like, because, I mean, 3 years ago, the situation was clear and I created an analog offline product with all the knowledge about what right range of dense and very fast inspiration, beauty, stunning pictures, latest trends or personal recommendations already exist in the online media today. So I think when you try to develop a new print product in these days, you have the knowledge and you know what's already existing, and you have to do something, create something new that is worth reading, that people, it's worthwhile to collect, and something that's so beautiful that people really want to have it, that they really want to hold it in their hands, an eye candy, an artwork for everything, like Salon is, we try to do an artwork for the belly, for the head, for the soul. like a new product that really exhausts all the possibilities of a print product, of a magazine, with a strongly curated content and images of wonder on a very international level. So that is actually, I think, what we try to do. And the very positive thing that we are very happy about it is that I think it works. Like, our fan base is really growing. And like last year, we did 12% plus in average from the reader side. So we sell now 25 to 26,000 copies. And also our advertising business is really growing very fast and in a very good way. So I think that's a very positive message, that I think you can still create products, print products that are, of course, smaller. And the target group is also very small and special. But I think you reach these persons exactly, and they really know that they are meant, or this is really the person that I created this magazine for.
Well, that's very nice, and because that's the kind of nice positive stories we like to feature here on the Stack. And finally, Anne, I would like to ask, besides, of course, your wonderful title, which other magazine titles do you like? I mean, it can be international or even some German titles as well.
Well, of course, I adore Francis von Hoffmann's titles, Lanzian. I also like more special titles, like, for example, I already read for years or since years, Selfridge, which is a very tiny, don't know if you know it, it's just about textiles and handcrafted stuff, also from UK. I like Justine Picardy, I don't know how you spell her, Justine Picardy, mm-hmm. as Town and Country, which is, of course, not so indie, but I think it's a very good magazine. I still really like the German Vogue. I think the German Vogue got better in the last years. Love Cabana. And I think also a very good title is Vogue Living and Entertainment Australia. I have that only as a subscription, an iPad subscription, but because that's just easier. I think that's also very nice, very good food. Also, this mix that is actually a little bit like Salon that does not exist so much in Europe.
That was Anne Peterson in conversation with Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and issue 12 of Salon is available right now. Finally, on today's programme, a magazine about cities that shines the spotlight on overlooked aspects of urban life. Eyesaw was started by a group of friends with the mission of engaging with the built environment beyond the way it looks. In its latest issue, reporting on the vertiginous skyscrapers of Hong Kong sits alongside a photo spread documenting one of the most deprived towns in the UK. Fernando spoke to two of the magazine's editors, Armin Nouri and Chris Giles.
Armin, starting with you, it's a beautiful title, but tell us more about the concept of the magazine. What is it about?
Eyesaw is our attempt to create a magazine which we wanted to broaden the audience for these kind of issues. So talking about urban issues, talking about issues which relate to how people experience the built environment, and translating that to, I guess, a wider audience. It was actually Chris who came up with the title, and so he's the kind of forefather of the concept. But it was something that which he very kindly shared with his friends, and we've been able to take it from there, really.
It's a good title, Chris, I have to say.
Cheers, thanks.
You know, I don't know, maybe I'm just guessing, but is it something perhaps that can be an eyesore, but actually, you know, it's beautiful, is where people live, you know, it doesn't need to be just, you know, the perfect building, but, you know, it's how cities work. Sometimes they're very organic and very tough environments to be living.
Yeah, exactly. So eyesore is, you know, one of the most common ways in which people will describe a building. And the magazine is about provoking people to look beyond that sort of, you know, pejorative word of how a building looks. The magazine is very much about the city as a lived experience.
It's also quite international. I know you guys are based in London and the whole idea started in London, but when you read the magazine, there are examples from everywhere, including my own country, Brazil. Was that the idea, to be that international?
There's crossovers in every city about people's experiences, and especially things to do with housing and public space, which are recurring themes in the magazine. But I think it was more or less a consequence of how it started. We started it basically with friends, and our friends are from all over the world, and that's how the contributing began.
And Arma, I was going to ask you, you're in issue 3. Well done, because, you know, that's a tough test, because some magazines don't even go to issue 2, for example. Tell us about, do you have some sort of business model for Eyesore, or you just do it organically in a way?
So Eyesore started when we were in the final year of university, all of us. So it very much started as, you know, you can call it a student DIY project. And since graduating about 2 years ago, it's evolved from that. Some things have evolved, some things haven't. So I think it's something that we need to work towards. But naturally, because of the oranges and something which we're kind of more looking at creating the content for now, but the business model definitely has to follow.
For example, where can you find iSore? What's your sort of UK distribution or perhaps other cities as well?
We're based in stores in London and Soho. Our distributors are Ari and Ollie, and you can also buy online. And our creative director, Nina, is in Belgrade, and I know you can also buy it there.
Guys, tell us, you know, there's so many different stories. You know, one of my favorites is the one that you did in the Periferias in Brazil with one of your contributors there. Tell us about which type of stories can someone read on iSore. Perhaps one of you can pick a story.
It's all about the experience of spaces. And I think one of the interesting pieces from the issue 3 is a group of activists from Nottingham who visit heritage sites which have been built off the profits of slavery. And these are people who go to these heritage sites and protest the whitewashing of this history. So examples like that are really ways of reimagining how we interpret spaces.
Arman, if you can pick up story.
My favourite article was an article exploring the relationship between smell and the city. So it was focusing on Dalston, but looking at San Francisco, Vancouver, exploring how smell is exploited by advertisers to sell products, but also how smell is used as a signifier of gentrification, how when new restaurants come in or new shops in, the smells change. That was definitely my favourite.
Guys, another thing I would like to know, from personal experience, I don't think you see a similar magazine like iSore in terms of the type of content that you guys provide. But which other publications do you guys read, perhaps for inspiration, or perhaps you just enjoy it? A question for both of you.
I'm a big fan of Delayed Gratification. I think their whole approach to news is brilliant. It's something that I think we all need. And the way it's designed is something which everyone should aspire to, for sure.
What about you, Chris?
There's a fantastic magazine from Pristina in Kosovo called Kosovo 2.0, and they tackle a lot of these issues about public space and local governance from the angle of Pristina itself, and it's a really fascinating magazine.
I also would like to ask you guys, one of you who is more involved with the design of the magazine, you know, about the paper. You know, I quite like the format. I think it's quite, you know, easy, kind of easy to read. I think it's great, but if one of you could describe the magazine format for me.
Sure. So I think there's quite an interesting story behind that, in that when we started, Nina, our creative director, she's from Serbia and she was studying at LCC. And so she really designed the format and our language of the magazine, which is based around a sort of mapping system. So when each contributor submits their article, they also submit the places which they mention. So it's really grounded in the experience of space as you move through the magazine and you relate to these icons, even if it's just in quite an invisible way.
That was Arman Nouri and Chris Giles, and you can find Issue 3 of iSore out now. And that's it for this week's programme. Thanks to our production team of Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Henry Rees Sheridan, and our editors Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to Fernando. That's it. Clutter up his inbox. You'll find him at fp@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the same time next week. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you for listening.